Om Shanti.
First of all, welcome for those who just came today. I hope you enjoy the season. Today we have a very special soul, Sister Manda, so we can greet her just like that. She coordinates one of the areas in the UK, and she's a very, very special soul whose reflection, deep learning, that's very appreciated by many, many of us. And so the topic today is a little complex, it's very long. It's on, but basically is on Mammon above. And it won't be a class. So it'd be like more like interview, conversation, talk. And if you want also to ask something, if the brothers can provide a mic there, that'd be great. So, Mandaben, thank you very much for coming here. And I would like to ask you, in relation to Mammon above, what's the meaning of that word?
It's spoken about in the Gita as a mantra, but possibly in Bhakti they chant it. But what's very beautiful about Gyan is that Baba explains the meaning of this. And of course there are different ways in which you can translate it. But if you notice, man, mana, it's basically two words for the mind. And when they use this word bhav, it's like, actually I heard this word projection in relation to this, as if it's a projection. But I didn't understand it at the time, but now I understand what that means. That when you say man, mana, bhav to someone, it's like saying, may you turn your mind to God. Or in the Gita, it's God Himself saying, may you turn your mind to me. Or may you turn your mind to my mind. So it's a may you, as in, if you're the recipient of this blessing, if you like, then you say, yeah, I turn my mind to God's mind. As if someone gives you something and you receive it and you take it. And so when God says, man, man above, may you turn your mind to me, I say, yes, may I, let me turn my mind. And here I am turning my mind to God's mind. So it's a very powerful thing whenever this word above is used. Then it's as if you take what's being said to be yours, and you experience it, you live it, you manifest it.
So everyone can experience that, you know, just turn your mind to God right now.
And just accept it that it's a blessing that's being given to me, that I can do this, I am this, that my mind is connected to God. And it's, for me, it's just a question of going into that space and experiencing it.
Same How thing. Do you go into that space? Because you said maybe it's a mantra outside, but we are not going to go and man above, man above, man above. I mean, it will be a little complicated to us. So what's the method, or one method at least, to practice it?
It's interesting that I think you should ask that. And what occurs to me as you say that, I hadn't thought about this before, that when it is that they say it's a mantra and they repeat it again and again and again, and whilst the repetition of any phrase has a vibrational energy and a vibrational effect on you mentally as well as physically. But what just occurred to me when you just repeated man, man above was that it's like a moment by moment experience. Mm-hmm. So when I say man, man above, I go there. When I say man, man above again, I go there again. When I say man, man above again, I go there again. So it's like treating it as a moment by moment experience or a moment by moment practice. When I was thinking about this topic this morning, I kind of had the sense that on the one hand, we can think of this huge topic, the effect of man, man above on your mind, your intellect, your sanskars, your body, and your karmic situation. On the one hand, it's a big thing, and I started to kind of explore it in my own mind. But I thought that we can make that a big thing and perhaps sometimes a bit out of reach. But what is important to remember is that when we are able to, moment by moment, be aware that, okay, my mind is going to God's mind, my mind is going to God, then in that moment by moment practice, moment by moment, I create that energy. I create that vibration for myself, inside myself and around me. And I actually then, I have to notice, I have to observe what's going on in that moment. And when I observe it, then in that observing, energy to see the effect that it has on me. So it's not like I go there, I have this huge long practice over a long period of time, and I'm straining and struggling through this practice, and then I finally get somewhere. I think when we wait for that, when we do that, then we become disheartened. But actually, every moment, a thought that you have, in that thought, can you sense the vibration and the energy of it?
Okay.
And that as you do that, you will notice automatically that the energy is building for you. And when it finally builds, then you kind of think, wow. But don't worry about not having the wows. But it's this soft moment by moment experience, I think, that is very important.
So it's the moment by moment experience. You don't have to say Mama Nabhav, right?
No, absolutely not. You don't say it at all. And Baba says not to say it, but okay, my mind's gone inside. What's happened to my thoughts? Mm-hmm. What's happened to my breath? What's happened to the energy that I feel right now in this moment?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's a moment, but the moment extends into more than a moment. It becomes 2 moments, 3 moments, a minute.
Mm-hmm. So we can have that practice a little bit.
Yeah, why not? Let's have that practice. So just sitting quietly, and I think it's also very important not to kind of get tense. The moment you say meditation, we go, okay, right, we got to sit up, alert, and make sure that we concentrate. But just softly allowing yourself to enter into that space and it's here and now. Don't think about going somewhere. This is something that I'm very conscious of. We think that we have to meditate, so we have to go somewhere and feel something and sense something. And I feel that we actually disconnect from the reality mm-hmm. of this present moment, of being here right now in this space, with these people, in this body, in this vibration and this energy. And so when I become aware that, okay, all right, just be quiet. As my mind becomes quiet and I say, okay, I turn my mind to God's mind. And God that I know to be just an energy, a vibration, concentrated in a tiny point of light, but his vibration, his peace, is vast. It can encompass the whole world within a second. His purity, his unconditional state. And can I absorb myself in that vibration of purity? Here, don't worry about going anywhere. Just here, the purity, the peace, this constant state of absolute being. Don't stop breathing. Notice your breath change. Its vibration. also if you were busy or doing something, then you might move on to do something. But otherwise when you're sitting here, you're just in that held by Baba's purity. And then it's not a question of my mind being separate from God's mind.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, my mind or the soul has become absorbed in that soul.
What do you mean by that?
As if I experience the oneness and no separation between myself and Him. That, of course, I'm not talking about omnipresence. I know that God is not omnipresent. I know that God is not inside me. But when I think of Him, when I sense, actually what I realized a while back, when I realize God as this unconditional love, and I have the sense of that unconditional love, what I'm really sensing is my own self being reflected back to me. So when I experience God as this unconditional love, in that moment, I am the same. I'm exactly the same. If I wasn't the same, I wouldn't experience it.
That's good.
If I wasn't that absolute, pure being, I can't possibly sense God's purity.
Mm-hmm.
And so, actually, what this is interesting for us to realize that I have to take ownership of myself as that too. Not just see God as that and separate myself from that. And that's when we become disheartened and lose our connectedness with Him. But actually, Baba tells us, you are the same as me. You are in perfect image of me. So it's not like this, because God's not a physical being. It's that. So when I say, oh, I experience Baba's purity, well, actually in that moment, I experience my purity. Otherwise, there is no realization of that purity or that unconditional state of God's love. I am that same. And so then when I take ownership of it, so when I actually, there is this aspect too, that when I experience it in Manmanabhav state, I have to do the work of bringing that experience here into action and interaction with others. This is two different things in one sense, but it isn't. But when I experience it, I remember Dadi saying a long time ago that when you experience a quality of God, you also realize that you have that same quality. You are that same quality. And it's not just an intellectual exercise, but think of it as a practice, as an experience. Why is it that you're here? Why is it that we are drawn to Baba? Why is it that God plays such an important and significant role for us? Because we realize who He is, but now it really is a question for me to have that sense. With this awareness and realization that I am the same.
That's wonderful. So I hope everyone had that experience. Was wow or just wah or just ooh? Was okay the experience? Yes.
It comes with time. I think when we have a realization of it, when you then sit in your meditation whenever and you recollect, well, actually, when here I am experiencing this, it's because I am that. And be aware, be mindful, notice that you are that. And even in actions, I think Brahmins are the most unconditional people. We have our sanskars to battle with, no question, with each other. But, you know, just look at Brahmins, how Brahmins are so ready and available to do anything, anytime, any place. This is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. This really is phenomenal. And so we're living that unconditional state, but also I'm living that because I am God's child.
That's
and I
great.
Know that because I am God's child, I am like Him.
You are talking about battling here, and we are talking outside just about how Mamanabhava is being talked in the Gita, no? Which is during
the battle
just
period.
Before, no,
yeah,
before
nice.
The battle.
Yeah.
And in fact, we are trying, I was at least trying to understand what's the meaning of that phrase in that context. Because we have so many struggles in life, we have to get job, we have to get money, we have to get on with other people, even the mother-in-law. You know, we have so many situations that are very complex and very difficult. Brexit, the situations in every country has one issue or another, and some issues make you go for the tissues, but Mamanabhava may help, because I feel after the talking with Manda was the role of Krishna there in that story was to tell Arjuna, hey, don't worry, okay? Pay attention on me, okay? Don't look at those guys. Go do whatever you have to do, but pay attention to me. So I want you to talk a bit about that.
You know, a practice that I've been having in recent times is that whatever is happening outside of me, and believe me, there are some very interesting things happening around me, and I could really feel completely at a loose end. And so I decided to experience, and I suppose give it the name Manmanabhava if you like, but to experience this internally inside myself, this place of stillness and stability and consistency. When Krishna is telling Arjuna on the battlefield, remember me, turn your mind to me, be Manmanabhava, it is so that whilst all of these things of struggle and all of these things are happening outside, but there is a place inside you that is absolutely stable and absolutely still and absolutely in a state of conviction that everything is okay. That everything will be okay. That from this place of stability and stillness, I have this projection comes to my mind again, that my future is absolutely certain to be positive, to be good and safe. Mm-hmm. And of course this stillness and stability inside myself comes with this presence of God. It's the only stable and consistent energy that I have in my life. There is no other consistent, unconditional, stable energy that I have except God. Mm-hmm. Nothing. And that means sometimes my mind, sometimes my situations, sometimes my body, sometimes my enthusiasm, any of those things. Or people, or I think people are one thing, they turn out to be something else. I think they're going to do one thing, they think of doing something else. Anything, nothing is consistent and stable. The only thing that's consistent and stable inside me is when I'm with Baba. And from that place, actually the manifestation of that is huge in my soul. And one of the first things that happens is a sense of safety.
Okay.
Safety, and when I'm talking about safety and a state that is free from freedom, free from fear. And now it's not the scary fear or monstrous thing that's outside of me, but the fear that we experience is the fear of, am I okay? Is everybody going to be okay with me? Is this going to turn out okay? Am I still going to have what I need tomorrow? These are the fears that create unstable conditions inside my mind. And of course these fears are because of body consciousness. So if I want to be free from these fears, you know, beautiful Murali today, when Baba spoke about soul consciousness in such an incredible way, and you know, I'm so aware that it's so darn simple. It is so simple. Practice of soul consciousness, practice of God consciousness, it is incredibly simple. And because it's so simple, it's so difficult. If it was difficult, you would engage yourself in unraveling and unpacking and engaging methods and all of this. Actually, there is no method except just get on with it and do it. Give it the time that's required. Give it the focus that's required. That's all it is. I'm not saying I can do it. I can be sitting there wanting to do this and my phone goes off or my phone flashes because of what WhatsApp messages come through and I'm instantly pulled to look at it. Or I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, okay, I have nothing to do now. I'm so happy. I have nothing to do. On the one hand, I'm happy, but then I start to get antsy. Maybe I should be doing something. Maybe I should be going somewhere. Maybe I should be talking to someone. What I'm trying to say is that these are so natural. We consider these to be natural thoughts and senses or reactions that we have, and we comply to those. Mm-hmm. And if we didn't comply to those, it would be just so simple. Take a deep breath and just sit. And just sit. And sit some more. And when I feel comfortable and safe in sitting, without thinking what's so-and-so going to say, they're thinking I'm not doing anything, no good for anything, never does anything. Even though I might be doing so much, but the moment I give myself 10 minutes, I begin to think like that. These are all aspects of fear that prevent me from being soul conscious, and lack of soul consciousness creates these fears, and therefore I also don't experience Manmana Bhav. And the effect, you know, this idea of effect I thought was interesting, that what is the effect of Manmana Bhav on my mind? What is God's mind? It's just peaceful. You know, my point of reference, I haven't got any other points of reference, but the point of reference I have is Avyakt Bhav Dada. Baba has said, Baba doesn't churn before he comes. Mm-hmm. He's not churning. But the state of peacefulness is so deep, so profound, so I want to say powerful, but I don't know, this word powerful, we kind of have this wham bam crash idea of power. It's not quite like that, but the softness and the gentleness of the power is the power. Does that make sense? And because of that, Baba doesn't have to churn. Baba sits. He sees, he gives drishti, and the right words come out of his mouth. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had amazing experiences of Avyakt meetings with Bap Dada. And sitting in front of Bap Dada, I've gone with sea of thoughts in my mind. And Baba will pick something that's exactly what I've been thinking and feeling, and we'll speak about that. Mm. Is he sitting there thinking, now, let me see what Manda's been up to for the last year. Let me see if I can have a real go at her and tell her where she's been going wrong. And really, and what? How should I use the language? Should I be soft with her? Should I be? Nothing. Of course. This is our mind that's lost and trapped in so many of all of these fears and things that I've been talking about, is the mind that is kind of saying all of this. Whereas God just sits in front of you, looks at you, and what needs to come out comes out of His mouth.
But one thing in relation to that, because what you say is nice, but not even this environment. I'm sure that some people, when you said WhatsApp, they check their phone. And because there are too many distractions nowadays. That's why the image of Mahabharata is quite precise, because I remember the description of the battle, especially with Mahabharata itself, how everything was a mess. After a while, everyone was attacking from all the points. There was no strategy, really. And nowadays, that's the reality. News come, a plane crashed somewhere, two planes crashed, in fact, one in my country, small. And so people start to get concerned. Oh, there was the problem now, Pakistan, no? When there was the crisis, people were going to Delhi for the program. And so in the morning, a senior told us, don't go. She was very polite. She said, consider not going. But the idea was not going. And in the evening, another senior said, go. So it was like fake news, which one? And it is very complicated. How to be Mammon above in this, you say, the sea of, or the storms, no? In the mind. What about the big storms that are happening all over us, all around us?
But isn't this what Baba means when Baba says, just come to that place when all of these things are going on. Come to that place. Don't go into the rationale of yes or this or that or the other. Just come and sit with me and you will know what you have to do. The answer will come. Yes, I should go. Yes, I shouldn't go. But the key here is, how much do I trust the answer that comes? Or am I putting more trust in what others are saying to me? Or whoever was the senior who told you in the morning and whoever was the senior who was saying it in the evening, which one do I believe more? Mm-hmm. Or is it the one that I believe inside my own self? Which one? And so that's why it's this, the work, you know, again, something that I've been working on these days more is my trust in the trust that God has in me.
So the trust in the trust God has in me.
Mm-hmm. Do I trust the trust that God has in me?
That's very deep.
This is because we kind of say we trust God. That's a separate thing now. Trusting God is one thing, but trusting yourself in the way that God trusts you. That's what I'm talking about. And I think sometimes the trusting of God is a bit of a bhakti sanskar too. Can be, not always necessarily, but it can be. But that trust in God, when that comes from the trust that I have in myself, that's an enlightened trust. Okay. Trust that's come from a place of understanding depth and meaning and a sense. Again, what I'm increasingly aware of, it's very easy to pick a point of jnana and say, oh, full stop, apply a full stop, you know, drama is perfect, everybody's okay, everything is going to be good. But when I say that, do I have a sense of it? Or is it just coming out like a verbal, you know, expression? Because that's what I know, that's what I've heard. But do I really believe, not just from the pace of intellectual understanding, but do I believe with that consistency, with that sense of internal stability and stillness and consistency?
That's very powerful.
That's the place I have to come from. When I say these things, drama is perfect, everything is accurate, don't worry about it, instead of just doing lip service and you irritate the hell out of someone else. Because, you know, they've heard it from every Brahmin that says, Om Shanti, full stop, doesn't matter, it's okay,
drama.
Move on, drama. And I have to say, I get irritated by that sometimes when I hear this and I think, excuse me? When you can tell when somebody is going to speak with that. And maybe I can't tell. Maybe I'm not picking up their vibration energy. But to come from that place of absolute stillness, stability.
Because you know, sometimes when things are going wrong, things are not well in life, that's one escape. I start to preach. Because when I preach to others, in fact, I'm preaching to myself. In fact, I'm reminding myself those points so I can apply. Other people, however, and that's a good point, about the effect of mammon above in the body. I know two souls. Now, something happened in their lives. And really, one of them, she got sick. She had to go to hospital. There was nothing. When she reached there, all the exams were positive. But internally, she felt like very bad because there was a big crisis in her life. The other one, she was very pakabrahmi, very powerful. When the crisis happened, she went to a person that she knew, a Lokic person. So she stayed with that person for 1 month, so until she recovered from the crisis. Because one thing is, I say, okay, Baba is protecting me, yes. Baba is helping me, yes. Everything will be all right, yes. But the things are not going all right, mm-hmm. because that's the nature of Kali Yuga. That's the nature of the big battle we are facing. So again, how to kind of hold the mind or do something, because even the body starts to get affected mm-hmm. by all these problems, mm-hmm. all this mm-hmm. reality that's mm-hmm. coming to knock at our doors.
Well, I think the how-to is what we already spoken about, and that is that to sit with Baba and to notice its effect on my body.
But how do I do? Should I tell the person who is bothering me, wait?
You as in what? They're trying for
insulting
your attention,
you
mean? Oh yeah,
you
just have to
problems.
Let them carry on. Let them carry on okay. insulting you and doing whatever they're doing. Okay, go ahead. But can I really? And then it's also something that I'm looking at, because I also have a tendency if something if I'm doing something and someone disapproves, or I'm making a decision about something and they don't like the decision, then I kind of begin to doubt myself mm-hmm. that maybe I'm wrong, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. But actually, to be able to look at my own self and be honest and true to my own self about the place that I'm coming from in terms of my decisions and my ability, or even the fact that Baba has put me here because he trusts my intention to do something. And so I have to, whatever someone else says, let it be. Mm-hmm. They say that. Great. That's what okay. they feel. I'm not saying I can do it yet completely every time. There are times when I lose it, but this is the effort I'm making right now. When somebody doubts my decision or my ability to do something, and I have to go, well, I've been put here for a reason. Baba trusts me. The seniors have given me permission to take this decision and be involved. Then I have to just believe that, accept that. But also, just to sit with Baba. But I think I want to say a little bit about this thing about the effect on the body. And I really think it's to do with the quality of our thinking and our ability to notice. I cannot emphasize this word enough, this word notice. We have to stop to notice the effect, whatever it is that's going on in my life. And when I remember Baba in the context of that situation, can I notice the energy mm-hmm. in that moment? As I said, for me, I begin to notice more and more my breath. Mm-hmm. The quality of my breath changes. The quality of, or the energy of my body changes. Mm-hmm. And you know, God's remembrance, why is it? You know, scientists are nowadays saying the practice of pure consciousness, the practice of this higher consciousness, and they mean God in this, is such that it can heal you in one experience. In one practice of meditation, it can heal you if it's powerful enough. And I've been thinking, well, how? And they have examples, they have proofs of how this happens, that people experience healing in this way. And how does that happen? What that is, that you completely disassociate yourself mm-hmm. from a negative experience of the past, that you no longer have any identification with it. But so your effort is not to let go, Your effort is not to let go of the negative experience of the past. Your effort is to have that connection with purity, with God, that unconditional energy of love and light and joy and truth to such an extent that you're completely absorbed in that experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Baba is talking about when he's saying supersensuous joy, bodilessness, being merged, being combined. This is the experience that Baba is trying to take us to. So that when you have that experience, it's like your disassociation from the past is such that whatever connection you had with it breaks. It's no longer there. And your new reality is the experience that you've just generated. Sometimes it's a one-off sitting, but sometimes you sit over a period of time, and then each time that experience becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. Then you would be able to let go of the effect. Because, come on, we all know that physical ailments come as a result of the emotional ties that we've made to our unresolved situations of the past. When we are young and we have negative experiences or painful experiences, we don't know how to deal with it, so we suppress it. And we suppress it in our body. And that's when it later on manifests as illness. And when that happens, when I disassociate with that experience of the past to such an extent that it no longer has any effect on me.
So if I have the opposite, if I start to conduct my, drive my mind, let's say, into a better road, a better idea, so that will also affect the body.
Absolutely.
But in a positive
Absolutely.
Way in that case.
And why Manmanabhav has that effect is that, and of course I'm generalizing this meaning of the word Manmanabhav, and what I mean by that is that just powerful remembrance of this pure, unconditional energy of love. That's what God is at the end of the day. And in that love, there is forgiveness. In that love, there is compassion. In that love, there is purity. There is nothing, because God is just this pure energy. Baba is not a physical being. And because it's really all about energy, it's all about vibration. And of course, and I'm not then, you know, it's like wishy-washy thing, but of course Baba in that concentrated form is the seed. But the seed doesn't just begin and end there. The seed is a place where it begins, but the vastness of God's qualities are immense.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, you know, that energy travels thousands of miles.
Mm.
And it can, you know, that energy can hold the whole world in its arms, in its hold, like that. But how much do I practice that, or do I become aware of that, practice that, and notice it? I come back to this word. Notice its effect on me. We see the effect of that here in Madhuban.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do we love Madhuban so much, despite so many hardships we experience here? Whether it's the food or the accommodation, we're willing to put up with all of that.
Hmm? The buses.
The buses,
yeah.
Especially now with the roads being so bumpy. You know, yet why are we willing to put up with this? Because we sense that subtlety here.
Mm-hmm.
And so the effect of God's remembrance, the effect of turning your mind to God's mind on your physical body, and then on your karmic accounts. There are two things in karmic accounts. There's the karmic situation that we know of, which is of this birth. Then there's the karmic effect, the residues of our past karma that you could define as sins if you like, but nobody likes that word, especially in the West. this word sin, we don't like. Forget the word. Don't use the word sin. Think of that as just the residues and therefore the effect of all the painful experiences of the past, which have resulted into ego, which have resulted into, you know, what are the vices? Just protective mechanisms. Fear, ego, attachment, lust, greed, all of these things, anger, are protective mechanisms.
Yeah, Kemba used to say that anger is the watchdog of the ego.
Absolutely.
So it's just watching, just protecting the ego. So
yeah, and because of that, don't, you know, Baba used the word yesterday. I don't know how it was translated in English actually, but I only read the Hindi Murali yesterday. Baba said that there should be nafrat for the vices. How was it used in, how was it translated in English?
Distaste.
Distaste? No, I translated when I read in Pandav Bhavan as distaste, but translation was distaste?
Distaste, yeah.
In English. Oh, good. Well, that's much better. Because actually the word hate, the love, the word nafrat means hatred.
Okay.
It actually, literal translation is hatred. But the hatred, why Baba's using that word, but it's not hatred that Baba's asking.
Emotional hate, no emotion.
Yeah, not a emotional, but it's, but recognizing the detrimental effect that something has on you, and therefore distaste for it. Dislike, distaste for it, because of the detrimental effect that the vices have on you. Forget about anything else, but the effect of anger on your physical body and on your mind.
I was talking yesterday about when you get angry, that impression lasts for months in other people.
That's right, but in other people, but on your body, I was saying to them in Hindi class, in class yesterday in Pandav Bhavan, that 10 minutes of anger has a chemical effect on your body for 6 hours. That's a long time. And so, so the karmic situation of, you know, and it only manifests as pain and sorrow and suffering. Sins only manifest as that.
But you know, one thing is, because I know you for many years, one of the things I appreciate in Mandaben is the fact that she's very much into action, but she keeps the spirituality in those actions. Because sometimes you can think about Brahman above to say, oh, it's too much problem, so I'll go and hide myself into some place there and I don't have to face all those situations. Or there is the bhakti, sanskar, of expecting, you know, that God will solve that for you. That's very strong, especially in the Catholicism. We are always expecting that God will do for us the things. But the reality I feel is that you have to go, you have to face, you have to talk, you have to go and perform your whatever you have to do in terms of karma. You have to deal with your body. Even so, meditation can heal you. The global hospital is always full. So you have to go there. I mean, you have to do things nowadays. Even now, we also advise people go to mental health doctors, take care of that part too. So it's not the shutting people you don't like, you know. But you are in that middle. But at the same time, you are working inside yourself. And I know you have been through many struggles, you know, as you said to us, in fact everybody knows now. So how do you deal with those situations that emerge? I know you are going to say just go and sit and remember about, but how do you do? I mean, what's the method of being in the middle of the storms and situations are all going around you? No, imagine yourself in a big washing machine. So you are there spinning and spinning. You can't just go open the door and come out. You have to wait for all the washing.
The cycle to be over.
The cycle to be over.
Hoping that it's not a long cycle.
Yeah.
Cotton wash or something.
So any good method of doing those things without having to open the door and just wash the floor and all of that?
Okay, well, I'm going to surprise you a little bit now, because I believe and I feel now more than ever before, and perhaps in this context, the washing machine example is not such a good one, because you can't fling the door open of the washing machine. But you can fling the door of your life open sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is that you do need to take spaces,
mm-hmm.
either in your day or even in your life, to take yourself out from that which feels like such a washing machine, not to run away from it, knowingly, consciously, deliberately, to take yourself out from it and really separate yourself and do some internal generation of power, create clarity, have realization, and then go back into it.
Mm.
And if you can do it, I'm not so good at it. And you know, when people nowadays say, oh, you know, I'm very good at action and I'm engaged. It's true, but because I was too engaged in actions, I find now that I didn't maintain the balance that I should have done of the balance of action, as well as in the day, on a daily basis. If I had done this for 30 years, I think I'd be in a different state now than I am. To be able to engage yourself fully, I totally believe in that, but to be able to take time for yourself in such a way that you can separate yourself and use gyan, use yoga to create clarity, to create focus, so that you can go back into it with that greater clarity.
So can this be a moment for all these people? Most of them are just coming to Madhuban.
Absolutely. We're here in Madhuban, and these are the moments I seek now.
Mm.
I still haven't learned, if you like, the balance on a daily basis to do that, because as you say, because I'm so anxious conscious, I can enter into a room and know exactly what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And if nobody else will do it, I'll be there doing it. And it could be as mundane as cleaning the floor or cooking, or if there's five people in the house, I'm the one who'll say, okay, what does everybody want to eat, instead of just cooking for myself. Or cleaning or washing the sheets because somebody just left and the sheets are sitting there. I'm the one who'll spot them, so I'm the one who ends up doing them. So then I'm the one who ends up washing and drying and ironing them and all that, because that's come in my notice. So I still find myself doing that. But I want to now be able to, okay, if those sheets are there, they can stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't be a problem if they get done tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
These little things, they seem so mundane, but it's the reality. Okay, I'm not going to do, okay, the five people that are in the house, they can eat tomorrow, because they need to eat. So I'm eating, so I don't mind cooking for five people. But, you know, instead of half an hour, before you know it, 2 hours have gone by. And you think, what did I do? But I'm learning now to, even if I see it, leave it there. Or even if there is something happening, park it and go into that space inside myself so that I can have the clarity and I empower myself to go back into the situation.
That's great. May I suggest everyone to visualize your own washing machine, visualize your own Mahabharat war.
That's better than the washing machine, because you can't fling the door open of the washing machine.
Well, in Mahabharat war, during the war, they said that every day the warriors in the night, at the beginning at least, they didn't fight, no?
Mm-hmm.
They even went to talk with the warriors from the other side. They used
right?
to drink chai, I guess, eating samosa, I don't know, together there. Yeah, that's part of the story, at the beginning, when it was not that messy. It's because the night nobody should do anything. That was the rule that moment. So I just would like to ask you, just stop. Just think, I'm in a retreat now. So I'm out of all that process. Let's apply all that Manda was telling us And if you want to add something, just let's go into a personal retreat. It's a personal collective retreat, but it's a personal one. It's just for me. So you can note down something you want to do this time, something you don't do there, something you want to do here that you do there. We can just turn our mind to God and just merge into that powerful being. One day I'll have to go back to that place. But let me take time, space, and go beyond, letting go.
But my thread changed a little bit, but I wanted to mention this aspect of the effect of God's remembrance on my karmic situation, although so the sins, inverted commas, of the past, which I don't know about, they actually only manifest in terms of my deep negative emotions that come. And so I think that the way I see it working is the same thing again, really, that Baba's remembrance and the vibrations of that remembrance and the quality of that remembrance allows me to experience, when I allow myself to experience Baba's love, Baba's compassion, Baba's forgiveness, then it's as if I let go of those. Mm-hmm. I free myself. It's not about Baba freeing me from anything, actually. Baba's ready and waiting. He's already let go of my sins. I'm the one who's holding on to them. So it's more about the sins of the past, or even things that I've done in this birth I know are perhaps wrong, and I can see the consequences of those actions today. It's me. It's all about me letting go of those. Sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously. And what Baba's remembrance, the more profound and more beautiful, more sweet, more lovely, more, all of those things my remembrance of Baba is, the more I'm able to experience my own sweetness. And actually, it feels ugly to be anything else. Mm-hmm. It feels not pleasant to be anything else. And so I just don't go there. I emerge, and I can especially become aware when I'm sitting in meditation, this sweetness emerging. This sweetness, this softness emerging. And as it emerges, to again notice it emerging, and then carrying it with me. That's more the practice sometimes, I think, after meditation. You know, again, when I'm telling you about scientists, they say that every time you sit in meditation, after each meditation, you're not the same again. You shouldn't be the same again. So imagine, can you really say, to ask yourself whether each time you finish a meditation, whenever it is, are you different than the way you sat in meditation? That's how powerful our meditation is. I'm not saying mine is, but that's how powerful our meditation ought to be. Mm-hmm. Because we have God personally, this awesome incredible energy of truth by our side, ready and willing and available to us. The only thing I have to do is to turn my mind towards it. The only thing I've got to do there. It's there, here, as close. It's in here, even. Traffic control. So practice that. That presence of truth. Incredible truth right here.
We have still a few minutes. Those who are going to Pandavava, we are going to finish before the bus leaves. I don't know if someone wants to ask something from Manda. You can come up or come down here. About the topic of Maman above, anyone wants to ask? So, no question, Manda, do you want to just wrap up?
Something that I mention usually when I'm doing something like this is, I think that sometimes in the practice of meditation, we try to escape. And what I mean by that is that when you your meditation becomes an intellectual exercise, when soul consciousness becomes an intellectual practice, I am a point of light sitting at the center of the forehead. And perhaps I'm being too kind of naive, but I still hear people do that or talk about doing that. Or I go up above and beyond. I used to do it. I'm not saying that I didn't do it. I used to do it. I go beyond, above, and I go to the soul world, and I find this world of light there, and Baba is there. All of that. And I think that practice was valid when we were new and we were learning. But now, I think what is helpful is to become so focused. Or, you know, language is very difficult in the sense that, because anything you say, everybody will interpret it in different ways. But to become internalized, and as you become internalized, become aware of yourself as this thinking, living, being energy that resides at the center of the forehead. And it is this living, thinking, conscient energy. This is who you are. And to allow that to be such a focus, to experience the livingness of that energy to such an extent that body dissolves, that the body dissolves. You're not going anywhere. You're not transporting yourself anywhere. But the body no longer, it's like, and I'm sure you've had that experience, you sit in meditation where sometimes you have your arm or your hand in such a way and you have to think, where is my arm? Where is my hand? Because you've lost the consciousness of the body. You're no longer aware of the body because you're so absorbed in the experience of being that living, thinking, conscient energy. And then it's not a question of going somewhere, I don't think either. But I really think it's a question of bringing that which is subtle to yourself. It comes to you. He comes to you. So whether it's subtle regions, you know, I remember Dadi saying this, and I know she didn't say it very often because I think she didn't want to baffle people. And that is that subtle region is inside you.
Mm. I remember once.
And it's inside in the sense, it's not that it's location. I mean, maybe it is up there as well, but it is that up there becomes down here. When you become so subtle, and in that subtlety, there is still an awareness and consciousness and all of that. But for me, that experience of meditation has now become more real.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that it helps me blend my subtlety into this physical world. And so I'm able to, you know, look through my eyes with subtle feelings. Or I'm able to sense them, my own subtle energy here, present. Or I'm more able to trust the energy that's around me that is more subtle. Because going somewhere else, it's going somewhere else. And it's just that if you can go there, it's great without and really let go of the consciousness of the body. But if it just becomes an intellectual exercise, which it has a tendency to do, which maybe it was just me. For me, it became an intellectual exercise. And maybe if it isn't like that for other people, and if it's not, then that's great. But if it is, then just this practice is very subtle. Sometimes I'll sit in meditation, and this aspect of, you know, scientists are talking about this thing that to experience pure consciousness means you have no name, no form, no role, no consciousness of anything of here, not even the time period that you're in. You're beyond all of that, and this is the experience of soul consciousness in the soul world. But the way they speak about it, and for me, you know, when you listen to the music that you like, you when you're meditating, the songs that you like when you're meditating, all of this is still keeping you trapped in the associations of the physical. And sometimes we are trapped in that. You know, getting, and of course, creating a beautiful environment is important. We do need to create an atmosphere of harmony, an atmosphere of purity, an atmosphere that's transportive, like that, in the sense that you can let go, you can sit and feel so safe and so comfortable, so instantly that you can be somewhere else very, very quickly. It's important. So what I mean by that is that not to be careless about an environment.
It's
that
a support.
Create.
It's a support system.
I think it's a necessity. I wouldn't call it support in the sense that, well, maybe it's me because I'm quite kind of, you know, I like everything in place. I like things in harmony. I like things tidy. If a room is messy and everything is all over the place and then you say to me, meditate in that place. Well, okay, I can go beyond that, but I'm thinking, well, other people come into this space, and how can they transport themselves? Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying being careless about the environment that we create. We do have to create a beautiful environment, and it's a gift that Baba does teach us as well. But, you know, have to have some certain kinds of music. I think a physical comfort is important. So that we're not distracted by the discomfort of the physical body. So if you can't sit on the floor, fine. But I'm also finding that as I sit up, a panda bow, and I can't sit very long on the floor, my knees start to go and my legs go numb and all that. But if possible, I try and sit on the floor. I see the difference when my back is upright and I'm sitting up straight. Mm-hmm. The effect of that on my mind is also noticeable. Because I'm more alert and I'm less likely to get my body is less likely to get heavy, and therefore then I have to make more effort to go beyond it as well. And so I just think so this aspect of being without, you know, because we're so trapped in who we have become as an individual. Mm-hmm. What skills we have, what talents we have, what personality traits we have, even they're attached to the pleasant ones, there are the unpleasant ones, all of those kinds of things. And we sit with those to be soul conscious. And you can't. You can't be attached to your own negativity or your positivity and be soul conscious. And sometimes I think we do that. Now think about that one a little bit more. How is that? How does that work? How am I attached to the personality that I call myself? The person that I call me? And we are so attached to who I call me. And when I call myself as something, and I'm attached to that, soul consciousness is very far away. Very far away. And if there's no soul consciousness, there's no God consciousness, then my remembrance of Baba is like a Bhagat remembering God. Again, I have to check myself, how much is my remembrance of Baba, me remembering Baba, like a Bhagat?
So, big reflection, right? Very deep. So she gave us so much food for thought that we don't need lunch, right? I think, I mean, it's a lot. I think, thank you. Thank you, Mandaban. We can just wave like this.
Thanks to Marcelo. Actually, we were supposed to have this conversation and then they decided that a class was better. And I said, no. They didn't ask me, by the way, before they decided that class was better. I said, no, class is not better. So then I had to rope Marcelo into it. He's busy, but I roped Marcelo into it. So thank you for agreeing.
Yeah, I'm leaving tomorrow.
He's leaving tomorrow. He's got whole things to do.
Yeah.
And so I So hopefully you get all your chores done.
Okay, thank you. So thank you everyone. So thank you the brothers for all that time. Can we have some yoga and then we go?